What's up, guys? Welcome back into the EPL Lounge. Match day three in the books. Sergio joining us once again. Another fun, crazy, chaotic week in the English Premier League, Serge.
This round was absolutely insane, Josh. So many talking points. I think this podcast could go for 4 hours if we wanted it to. We're going to have to hold ourselves back on some of these discussions, I think.
The good news is there's an international break, which is not good news in itself, but I mean it. We won't be previewing match day four just yet. We'll save that for next week, but it does give us basically free rein to just dive into match day three and what's happened so far, and also take, I think, a little bit of a look at what we think will happen in the next month of Premier League football coming out of that international break as things get a little bit hectic, especially for those teams in Europe. But hey, like I said, given the how many talking points there are, let's just jump straight into match day three. We'll start with match day three winners. Serge, I'll let you go first. What's your standout from the weekend?
So the first guy I've got is actually Mikel Antonio at West Ham.
Yes, we've doubled down, Serge. We've done it.
You've got Mikel Antonio on your list?
I have Mikel Antonio on my list, yep. Yeah,
it's a milestone. First time that we've agreed on a winner or a loser this season. Yeah, he must be doing something right.
He's been phenomenal. I'll let you go first, yeah. But he's been phenomenal.
Yeah, absolutely. So first of all, obviously, I want to give him massive props for the form that he's in. You know, arguably the form of his life. And, you know, he has had a pretty good career. You know, he's been called up to the England squad a fair few times. But, you know, I also want to pay homage to that glorious goal. You know, it's not the most scintillating goal, but if you look at it from the perspective of the role of a centre forward, you see him muscling off the defender with just the right amount of force to you know, be able to take the ball and run with it but not cause a foul. Then you've got that really acute angle where, you know, if he's going to strike on goal, he can really only go to the near post, which the keeper should have covered. So yeah. The only way he scores is if there's a tremendous amount of power, a tremendous amount of precision, and he gets the timing just right. Like he just snaps that shot off at the right moment. And you see him do everything to absolute perfection in that moment, shrugging off the defender, making the space and just absolutely drilling the ball into the back of the net at the near post. That was just a phenomenal goal.
Yeah, fantastic. Not just the, you know, the efforts and output of the weekend either. I mean, the way he started the season, West Ham have looked great themselves. They seem to have carried over a lot of the good that they managed to put together from last season. But 4 goals, 3 assists already, but not just those numbers. 1.1 expected goals per 90 minutes in the Premier League. Small sample size, I get it. There's no way he'll maintain it, but that is incredible. Absolutely incredible stuff. You know, and like I said, the assist to match as well and everything just going through him at the moment for West Ham going forward. He just looks like a complete number nine for them up top, which is remarkable given, you know, the roles he's played in his career up until last season, basically, when they decided that he was going to be the man to lead the line for them. And, you know, there were talks pre-season about them dipping into the transfer market to find probably an outright number nine. And I think, you know, Antonio making the decision to steal the actual number nine jersey that was vacant kind of speaks to how he may have felt about that situation. But there is just no hotter commodity in the Premier League right now than him. It's basically plain and simple. And I really do hope he carries it on as well coming out of the international break. I would hate this break to ruin his momentum the way it does, you know, for certain teams and players whenever these breaks sort of come up throughout the year. So, yeah, huge props from Mikel Antonio, the absolute biggest winner of match day three and I think of the season so far, it's fair to say.
Yeah, totally agree with that one, Josh. I think worth mentioning as well, you know, a bit of confusion over his international future as there has been a cloud over it. He was called up to the England squad, never actually played for England, and then he accepted an offer from Jamaica to represent them.
Yeah.
But I don't think he's even made an appearance for Jamaica yet because some documentation didn't come through in time. But you know, at the age of 31, you really want to see him have a crack at international level. And I think that, you know, I'm not sure what the situation is, but I think that he would be very strong consideration for England were he willing to represent them now. But, you know.
Maybe alongside your boy Patrick Bamford, right?
Yeah. No, Leeds have got a few big call-ups. Rafinha as well for Brazil, Bamford, England. Really excited for the guys at Leeds. So,
any other winners for you, match day three?
Yeah. So I'm actually going to reverse course on last week a little bit. And rather than giving big props to a performance without a result, I think I'm going to go result without a performance, but there is a little bit, there is a little bit more to it. I'm actually going to bite the bullet and put Man United in my winners column this week.
Big from you, Serge. Big.
Yeah. Look, I'll be honest, it's not just about the result on the weekend. It, you know, this is the CR7 factor as well.
Okay.
And I think what Ronaldo is going to bring to the club, you know, that 11th hour seal from Manchester City, this is just a story in itself. You know, again, this could be a podcast in itself if we discussed it at length. It's such a huge story, but... yeah, I just think Ronaldo is an absolutely huge signing for them in every way. The profile of the club, the morale of the players, you know, age aside, you know, he's one of the two best players in the world. And you can make the argument alongside Messi. They're both in the argument for best of all time.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's still 36 years old, but he can still bring it. And, you know, really, really interesting on so many levels, given he was about to become probably the biggest villain in the history of the club. And then all of a sudden, I mean, would you like to discuss this transfer a little bit further, Josh? Or do you think
we'll stick to it now? We'll stick to it while we're on it. So we're going to kind of, I guess, just cross paths here, because on my losers column, actually, so I have the same player in both my winner and my loser column for this week, aside from Mikel Antonio, and that's Mason Greenwood. I think he's been fantastic again to start the season. The reason he's also in my losers column is I think he could be the biggest loser of the Cristiano Ronaldo arrival. You know, is it possible that he can stunt his growth and development given that, you know, it's possible that, you know, all three of them play, Ronaldo, Rashford, Greenwood, and Solskjaer finds a way to make it work. But if that's not the case, you would imagine that Greenwood's the one to miss out, right? I don't think a world exists where Solskjaer is going to be benching Ronaldo in favor of these two young guys, regardless of form and regardless of how they're playing. And that is concerning given, A, the growth he's shown in the last sort of 12, maybe you could say a little bit longer, 12 months or so. But also the fact, I think, that he's at an age now where you don't really want them sitting on the bench and learning from other players because he's already proven himself capable. Now's the time where you want to be giving him as many minutes as possible to really sort of get as much experience into him at such a young age and see exactly where his ceiling lies and how much potential this kid truly has. And like I said, you know, he's in my winners column because another brilliantly, you know, taken goal. His goals that he takes are just fantastic. Three goals to start the season already for him. Yeah. You know, he's just so clinical. His movement's fantastic. He's, you know, got a terrific left foot, terrific right foot. For someone so young, seems to have a very natural instinct to get himself in goal scoring positions as well. And like I said, I wonder, is he going to be the one that suffers the most from Ronaldo's arrival, despite all the positives that, you know, someone of that stature brings to a club when they come in?
Yeah, look, Josh, you raise a really, really good point. I think that Greenwood could be the one to suffer in that attacking formation. However, you know, the Premier League is the most physical league in the world.
Yeah.
And You know, I know we look at oftentimes we look at someone like Ronaldo as this, you know, he is an extraordinary athlete, but he's no godlike figure. He's still a human. He's going to be coming back to this league, and Solskjaer is going to want to get the absolute most out of him in the big games. I don't see him playing, starting, say, for example, like Champions League midweek, Premier League on the weekend. Do you think
that that's a reasonable expectation to have? I mean, it is for most people when they get to this stage of their careers. But I mean, you look at the manner in which he's left Juventus, and you know, there's grumblings about the fact that he sort of forced his way out because it became apparent that he wasn't going to be a regular starter every single week and every single match day. If that's the case, you know, obviously this is pure speculation, but if he's decided to come back to United, is there some sort of agreement in place where he has to be in that starting 11 and he's considered a crucial part of the team week in, week out?
Well, look, if that agreement has been made, I can't imagine that they would make that contractual. It must be verbal. And look, I think this is one of the areas where I think that this was the best move for Ronaldo, because I really think he's going to thrive at United in a way that he would not have at City. Like, he's the man at that club.
Yeah.
Even more so than Solskjaer. So I can see him dictating. And, you know, maybe if Solskjaer wants to rest him, you know, he'll get up in his face and he'll have words about it. You know, he's that kind of personality. And that's precisely why I didn't think that he would be a good fit at Manchester City.
Yeah.
Like, if anyone that has read Zlatan Ibrahimovic's autobiography will know, Guardiola doesn't tolerate those big egos and those big personalities. I was actually led to believe, and this is just purely speculation, but I'd love to get your opinion on it, that Guardiola never wanted Ronaldo at the club. Like, I think it was the owners.
I would absolutely expect that to be the case. When I first heard he was going to City, I was kind of excited. I was like, this isn't going to work. Like, you know, it's going to cause more friction and I think internal unrest than any positives that he could possibly bring to that team. So I was all for the move personally. I was a little bit upset by the fact that it fell through.
Yeah, and you look at City and you kind of feel like these owners just want that big scalp. You know, they were close to signing Messi 12 months ago. They were chasing Messi and now they were chasing Ronaldo. It's almost like they want that that validation that, you know, we have arrived. Like, we're signing one of the big one of the biggest players in the world. And it's more than that. It's business as well, obviously. Increases the international profile. You sell jerseys. You get more interest in Asian countries and all over the world. So there is a massive business side to it as well. But Guardiola, he's not a businessman. He only cares about football. He wants the players that are going to listen to what he tells them to do. And you just don't see Ronaldo fitting that system. So, you know, it makes perfect sense to me why he opted for Man United, in addition to, like, you know, all the emotional reasons and, you know, protecting his legacy there and all those sort of things. But I think it's the best football decision for him by far.
Yeah, from a football standpoint, I think so as well. I mean, when it became apparent and clear that he was absolutely leaving Juventus, the only two moves that made any logical sense to me were Man United or back to Real Madrid. You know, from his standpoint, I think they're the only two places where he could have gone, still been impactful and still been in a strong position to win some sort of silverware as well. Which ultimately is what drives him as a competitor. I think you can absolutely make very valid arguments for and against his arrival and the impact it'll have. I think the pros for Man United outweigh the cons. In the immediate sort of aftermath and short term, the long-term effects, I guess, it remains to be seen. And it'll be very interesting to watch it unfold, I think, because, you know, like you said, he's still a winner and he's still impactful. And you look at games like that Southampton game last week, if Ronaldo's there, you kind of just feel like he's the type of player who'll find a way to win them that game, right? Where they have complete sort of dominance, they have all the possession and they just cannot find, you know, the missing piece. And that's basically him in a nutshell. But again, like, yeah. you know, go.
I was just going to say, like, I think all you need to do is get one incredible season out of him. Like, you know, again, different age, but you look at Van Persie. They signed Robin Van Persie when he was 29. He came in, he had one great season, won them the league.
Yeah.
You know, he's a legend at that club. Like, if Ronaldo, I'm not saying he's going to. I'm not going to go that far. I think he's going to help them challenge for the title. Absolutely. I think he's going to improve the team. But if he was them to bring the Premier League title, you know, it doesn't matter how much you're paying him or what the transfer fee is. Like, he's paid it back in dividends times 100 as far as the club is concerned. So, and I think that's true if he helps them win any silverware, really. I think they're desperate for it at this stage.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. Yeah, it can literally be anything, I think, this season. FA Cup, you know, European trophy, whether it's Champions League, which I don't think they, you know, maybe they fall in the Europa League again and win that. I think that would even be some sort of boost for them. Anyway, touching on match day three, any other winners for you before I move along to the losers?
No, I've just gone with the two winners this week.
Yeah, likewise as well. Mikel Antonio, Mason Greenwood were my two winners. Let's go to the losers then, I guess. Match day three losers. Do you want to kick this one off? And I'll give you the mic in anticipation of, is it fair to say Arsenal are there again?
Do I have a choice in the matter, Josh?
I don't think so at this point. I think, look, we had our first agreement in Mikel Antonio, but assuming Arsenal are just living in your losers column, we have another agreement here because they're in mind this week.
Another milestone. This one surprises me perhaps a little less than Mikel Antonio. I would have raised my eyebrows if you didn't have Arsenal in your losers column this week.
Yeah.
It's become impossible to ignore at this point. Look, I don't even know where to start. You know, I've been speaking with Arsenal fans during the week and I've heard all sorts of excuses, explanations, whatever you want to call them. You know, there's the injuries. You know, there's a lack of desire, there's a lack of structure. You know, Arteta isn't the right fit. The owners aren't investing. You know, it doesn't matter any how you slice it, how you want to explain it. I think the fact just remains, and it has to be said, Arsenal are the worst team in the league right now. They are absolutely garbage.
I kind
of... They are bottom of the table, so it's not a radical statement.
I know.
They have people worse goal difference. So, I mean,
no, I'm with you. And, like, you know, three games, no goals scored, 9 goals conceded. You look at sort of the somewhat deeper analytics that we look at, their expected goals, 1.77, the worst in the Premier League. That's 1.77 total, by the way. That's not per game. That's 1.77 across three games of Premier League football.
Wow.
Expected goals allowed sitting at 10, which is, again, the absolute worst in the league. So they've conceded 9. Expected goals allowed is 10. The second worst is Newcastle at 7.65. Goes to show how massive the gap is in that regard as well. But like you said, an absolute shambles right now, top to bottom. And, you know, it doesn't really matter where you point the blame. Because it's a collective thing. It's the owner, it's the board, it's the manager, it's the players, everyone. You know, like you said that you could spend a podcast on Cristiano Ronaldo. I think you could spend one on Arsenal as well, even as a neutral. You don't have to be an Arsenal fan to sort of tear this team to shreds and go through everything that's wrong with that club right now. Just things in that game that were mind-boggling, like, Granit Xhaka is meant to be the leader of that team. Like, the contract he got is outrageous, just beyond stupid. I don't know. Like I said, there's just so much wrong with that club. But, you know, that tackle, regardless of what you think of it, is just idiotic. That's all it is. Plain and simple. It's just dumb. There is absolutely no need for it. There's no good that can come from something like that at that point in the game when your team is in that situation. And again, you're meant to be the leader and, you know, I guess trying to instill some level of belief and confidence in the squad. And you go and do something like that, which in a way kind of just screams like you're giving up because you want nothing to do with it and you have no interest in being out on the field anymore.
That's the worrying thing for me, Josh. Like, I look at this team and the way they're playing, this isn't just a team that is bad. This is a team that is breaking down. When one of your leaders has a mind snap like that at such a, look, you can't call it a crucial moment of the game because they're already 2-0 down. Yeah. But still, you don't put yourself in that position to leave your team out there 10 against Manchester City. And look, Manchester City weren't at their best and they put 5 past them. You know, if this was a better day for them, it could have been 6, 7, 8. God knows.
Yeah.
You don't leave your team stranded like that. So, look, there is something very, very wrong with what is happening on the pitch for them right now. And it's deeper than just it's deeper than just having a bad team and a lack of belief. So
yeah, and like part of it is like I said, you can point the finger everywhere, and I think part of it is Arteta, and a little bit of me feels sorry for him. Not in that I think the team is sort of not performing to his standard, but the fact that I don't think he ever should have really gotten the job given where the club was when they brought him in. He's completely inexperienced, you know, and he was brought in on assumptions as to what he's capable of. And the bottom line is this is not a team that can be playing that sort of game right now. You know, they need to turn things around quickly, and he looks like a fish out of water at the moment. Like, I don't think he knows how to fix the situation, which is equally concerning, because you look at what they've put forth so far, and yes, I do still believe they're a better team when they have all their pieces available, and you know, they were missing quite a few pieces for sure, but it's not as simple as just inserting those players back in the lineup and everything's going to be good and dandy again. It's a far cry from that because of how bad and how far down they've slipped at the moment. In these moments, you need a manager with experience in situations like this that can turn things around and, you know, get the dressing room on the same page. And when I look at Arteta, the body language doesn't suggest someone who's capable of leading that dressing room right now, and turning things around in a way that the clubs and more importantly, the fans expect from this team.
Yeah, and look, I totally agree. And I think Arteta looks like a really bad fit right now. And part of the reason is tactical, as you say. I don't think he has the answers. But the other part of it is personality. Yeah. Like, he's such a mild, mannered personality. And often when we watch the Premier League, we see the teams play very much adopting the personality of their manager. And, you know, it's a really fascinating thing. But, you know, right now you kind of feel like Arsenal need a manager that has some fire in the belly and can get these guys, you know, really, really fired up, playing with a bit more passion and intensity. And obviously I don't mean in the manner of Granit Xhaka's very, very ill-advised tackle, but, you know, doing it the right way and just getting out there and just fighting as if they're in a relegation scrap, which at this very moment in time, they are.
Exactly. You know, and as a fan, it just must be so infuriating as well because, like I said, there's so much wrong that you look at the season ahead and what's to come and I don't know where to start. Like, I don't know what coming out of the international break, like, what do you want to see happen? Do you want to see, it's not just as simple as saying, I want to see a better performance because you need to start getting results, right? Especially when the club and the players are in a situation that they're in, you can pull forth 2 really good performances coming out of the international break. But if you lose both those games, it becomes really dangerous and that can become a really toxic environment and things can get drastically worse than what they are right now, which seems almost impossible. But that's the reality of it. Whereas, you know, at the same time, it's not as simple as let's come back from the international break. Let's just get a win on the board because, like I said, there's so much more fundamentally wrong with that club right now that's not really going to just appease fans in the slightest. And right now, that's a team that I think wants to play as far away from their home ground as possible on a weekly basis.
Yeah, and look, I've been in this situation myself as a Leeds fan you know, 20 years ago or so, when we were just gradually sliding down and, you know, into those relegation positions and, you know, the club was in an absolute shambles. And no, I'm not suggesting that Arsenal are quite at that level. There was a lot more sinister stuff going on behind the scenes at Leeds. But I can tell you as a fan, when you're seeing your club and a club that is expected to do quite well, struggling so badly, the number one thing that you want to see, and this is to your question, Josh, what do you want coming out of the international break? You want to see the players out there fighting first and foremost. Yeah, get them exactly. Fighting, get them battling for every ball, get them fired up, running around, playing with intensity. Once you've got that, the fans appreciate that. You know, if you start really putting in those kinds of performances, you start to get the fans on your side. And then look, Arsenal do have some quality. And the results will come, especially against your lower level
lesser opponents.
I think that's step one, but obviously that's not going to fix all their problems again. I do think they will need a managerial change at some point, whether it happens now or Christmas or another couple games time, I don't know. I do think it's inevitable at this stage. And again, look, I want to say we've spoken a lot about Wenger, Arsene Wenger, in the last few weeks. And I actually think Wenger's brilliance as a manager masked a lot of the deficiencies of Arsenal Football Club.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah.
Because now you're seeing what it's like to operate on a shoestring budget and be expected to compete with the top four that are outspending you 3-1, 4-1 every single season. It's just there's a massive disparity between the expectations of the fans and the actual ambition of the club. And I think that's a big problem.
There you go. Exactly. Yeah, there you go. I think that's it, right? But look, that's a loser. Do we have any other? I mean, they're probably the biggest loser so far this season, let alone just match day three. But do you have any others from match day three as well?
I do. And this one's going to spark a big debate as well. So I don't know if you want to go into it now or if we want to hold off on it. So I'll tell you my loser and then you can
decide.
Let's go.
We have free reign. We don't have to preview match day four. So let's do it.
My second and final loser of the week is the rule makers. And
you're opening a can of worms, aren't you?
I'm opening up a big can of worms here. Whoever is responsible for that Reece James decision, you're my loser for the week.
All right. Look, was it harsh? Yes, it was. Would I be absolutely livid if it happened to my team? Absolutely. Was it the right call? Yes, absolutely. I think watching it all unfold in real time, I just remember being up in arms about the fact that it looked a very clear handball to me before, you know, the VAR did go and do their check and they went and looked at it. And I think I was just, my emotions were so high that I was kind of just fixated on the fact that look, make the right call, you give us the penalty, we'll go from there. When they showed the red card, I was a little bit shocked at first as well. Like I said, I wasn't paying too much attention to the replays because I knew what I saw and I just wanted the confirmation. Having watched it back, when they showed it at halftime, B, watching the incident back the next day and the game back the next day, I think it's pretty clear cut to me because it's not the issue of it hitting his thigh and rolling up and hitting his hand, which clearly prevented the ball from going in. Right. You know, you can make it the case that the arm was in a natural position and I wouldn't disagree with that whatsoever. But, you know, when you're on the line and that's the only reason the ball doesn't go in, that the penalty is inevitable. The issue stems from the fact that as it's hit his arm, he's made a very clear and obvious decision to propel the ball away from goal using that arm. As Jota sort of arrived at the same time. And that is why I think the red card was the right decision. Had he not deliberately tried to push the ball away and had it just struck his arm, it fell there. A, I think that there's a chance it would have gone in, you know, in that little scramble. But B, there's no way you can give a red card in that situation. I think he kind of gave himself up by, like I said, that movement and that deliberate action to try and propel the ball away from the goal using his arm is the reason it was a red card.
Okay, so I just want to, first of all, clarify the ruling as I understand it. You might have a bit of a better understanding than me. You know, like yourself, I've watched clips, I've watched analysis, I've listened to referees break it down. Yeah. My understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that the red card was given simply because the ball hitting his arm, irrespective of intent, irrespective of the movement of the arm, but the fact that the ball hitting the arm prevented the goal, prevented the ball from going into the back of the net.
Yes.
So there's no touching on intent. And I think that is also backed up by the fact that we know that the referee went over and checked the VAR and only observed a freeze frame. He didn't see the
so, yes.
incident in real time. He exactly. only saw the contact with the arm.
Yes.
Correct? So
yeah.
I think then it's fair to say that in terms of the red card being given, it has nothing to do with the fact that, as you say, the ball hit his arm and then the arm sort of like flicked it into a different path.
I'm assuming that's the case as well. I've heard, and again, this is other people now making assumptions, right? But like yourself, you know, like I've heard interpretations from former referees and you know, other pundits as well. But I've heard that the conversation had between referee and VAR stipulated that he needs to check it because it was a deliberate handball. And I think him going and looking at the screen and just seeing the still was sort of merit that, yes, it's hit his hand. And maybe he has taken into account the fact that VAR has looked at it and has indicated that it was done deliberately.
If that's the case, then, you know, the decision seems even crazier to me, because the whole point of these rules, they're trying to take all the ambiguity and all the subjectivity out of decisions, because, and rightly so, you know, referees can't read the player's mind, right? They're not mind readers. So sometimes you don't actually know whether they intended it or whether they didn't. And I think this is one of those cases. So to be able to make the determination that this was deliberate, to me, seems absolutely impossible. And I think that is that for me, it's because the ball hits his hip first and he's moving across and his arm's in quite a natural position. So, you know, and again, like, we could get even deeper into the weeds of this and say, maybe he knocked it away instinctively, but not deliberately. Like,
yeah, are those, yeah, 100%.
Same thing? Because this is all happening literally in a fraction of a second.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, he might have knocked it away deliberately and not even realized it.
Yeah.
Because it was instinctive.
100%. So I had that exact conversation with someone else as well, just thinking, as a player myself in that situation, there is a chance that I would do something like that subconsciously, not doing it deliberately. If I had, you know, the time and the frame of mind, there's obviously no way in the world I would do that, knowing full well what the consequences would be. But when you're thrown into that situation and you don't have any time to sort of think, and everything is basically just on instinct alone, and, you know, the whole purpose is just keep the ball out of the back of the net, there's a chance that I would have done something like that as well. And if you watch it back on replay, it can look deliberate despite me being adamant that it wasn't. So I 100% agree with that point as well, that, you know, it maybe it wasn't deliberate despite it looking a deliberate action.
And look, I just want to clarify as well, from everything I've read and I understand, by the letter of the law, everything was done correctly. So I'm not disputing that. I'm not disputing necessarily that this was the wrong decision by the letter of the law. What I'm disputing is that the letter of the law is absurd in this instance. And I really think the smoking gun for that, it's this simple. The fact that we're having this discussion, the fact that there's thousands of people having this discussion, and this has just dominated all the Premier League talk this week, it tells you that something's wrong. People instinctively watch this and think to themselves, this isn't fair. Like, you've got Klopp coming out and saying the decision was harsh and he doesn't like the rule. Yeah. You know, for an opposition manager to come out and say that, I think is pretty significant. And, you know, I guess for me, again, you need to look, it always comes back to this very same principle, which is that the referees, you know, in all cases, they know the rules, but in a lot of cases, they don't know the game. They don't really understand the game. And look, I understand, you know, your rules are your framework and, you know, look at this in context of what the rules are, but you have to apply some common sense to the situation. And, you know, again, I think this is difficult because with VAR and everything that has been implemented since, they are trying to take the ambiguity out of these decisions to provide more clarity and more consistency from week to week. So I understand the impulse to do that, but I still think sometimes you've just got to look at an incident and just, you know, close the rule book and just look at yourself and say, look, it's a penalty. No denying that, but to send him off for something as, you know, it's just not clear at all. If it was clear, it wouldn't have sparked debate all over the world. It wouldn't be dominating conversations. And I've seen compelling arguments on both sides from those saying that it should have been a red and those saying it shouldn't be. And yeah. I saw a really good conversation, Carlton Cole and Jose Enrique, where Jose Enrique's started to change his mind a bit and actually come across. But just the fact that, you know, it's not about necessarily being right and wrong, but if we're having this much of a debate about it, look, put it this way, Josh, let me ask you this question. If it's a penalty and he gets a yellow card, do you think there would be as much uproar as there is now?
No, I wouldn't have flinched as a fan. Yeah.
No one would have complained. It would have seemed like the right decision, I think, to everyone. And look, if anyone in the chat disagrees, I'd love to get some insights from our live viewers. But that's my perspective on it. So I'm just really disappointed as a fan that, again, we try and, you know, this goes back to our VAR debate that we had a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
I think that VAR is excellent in some situations and bad in others.
Yeah, it's almost better in principle than it is in actuality, and that's probably the most frustrating part of it. But, yeah, let's not start another VAR debate because that will definitely go for another hour. One comment, though, from the live viewers. Interesting how the same score differs in perspective. A 1-1 for Chelsea seems a win, a 1-1 considered a loss for Liverpool. I think 1-1 definitely feels like a win for Chelsea circumstantially. I think you saw that post-game as well, the players sort of celebrating and coming together, which I found interesting that some people sort it out to be irritating and unprofessional. Like, it's one of the silliest things I've ever heard. They had every right to be, you know, celebratory after a result like that, given the circumstances. Definitely feels like a win. I don't know if it necessarily feels like a loss for Liverpool, though. As a fan, it was frustrating. You know, there was moments, especially to start that second half, where it just felt inevitable, like it was going to happen. It was just a matter of when. But Chelsea seemed to manage the storm really well. And then, you know, as the game wore on, it became less and less likely that a goal was coming. So frustrating would probably be the word I put down as a Liverpool fan. And I think that the players might feel as well. But I wouldn't say it feels like a loss. It's by no means demoralizing or anything like that. Thoughts on that, Serge?
Yeah, and I mean, Chelsea adjusted after the send-off and, you know, they made a couple of substitutions. You know, even with 10 men, it probably would have been harder for Liverpool to score.
Oh, 100%, after the changes
were made.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't think it should necessarily feel like a loss for Liverpool. But, yeah, you can absolutely understand how it feels different for both teams. Given the fact that the send-off happened, you know, it's such a crucial part of the game, and it sort of, it shifted the momentum big time. Yeah. You know, Chelsea were playing quite well up until then, and obviously 10 men away from home, you have to shut up shop
at that point
to some extent.
Absolutely.
So they had to adjust the way they played.
Absolutely. I thought Chelsea played really well on the counter. They looked very dangerous in how they were set up in that regard. That said, I did actually think we were the better team the vast majority of that first half, even when it was 11 versus 11. I don't think any team really created anything too clear cut before that. I think the even half chances sort of both ways. The goal itself, like Kai Havertz's goal, was ridiculous. Whether he meant it or not, I don't know, but it was insane. Like the analytics gave that a 0.02% chance of going in.
I don't think it was intentional. I just think, I think he was just trying to header the ball into a danger area, and it might end up in the back of the net. It might get, it looked awesome.
Yeah. But hey, back on last week's topic, I just, would like to point out that Virgil van Dijk absolutely pocketed Lukaku and made him look like your bang average championship striker every time that the two came head to head. Lukaku's only success was when he tried to headhunt Matip, and even
I was just going to say, there was one occasion they he just pushed Matip off the ball and fed it was a Mason Mount that they probably should have scored that opportunity as well. But you're right, absolutely. Van Dijk, different proposition.
Yeah, exactly. So I'll take that as a small win, I guess, from the weekend. but hey, look, we're not going to talk match day four in specifics. We've got a little bit of time left before we call it a show. Let's take a look at sort of the month ahead in the Premier League, because when we get back, European football's back, the League Cup, midweek cups are back. Things are going to get really hectic for these top teams that are, playing in European competitions and such, to the extent where I was looking it up, and I believe that all of the top 5 to 6 from last season are playing a game every 3 days for almost 4 weeks straight. So it's going to get, like I said, absolutely hectic. What are you expecting coming back from the international break, sir? Do you think any team is going to benefit more than others? Or do you think that what we've seen so far, the top teams that we expected to be top teams, your Cities, Chelsea's, Liverpool's, are able to sort of pick up from where they're leaving off and continue to separate themselves from the rest? Or is this fixture congestion going to cause absolute mayhem along the Premier League?
No, I don't expect it to. See, the thing is that, the clubs that play the most fixtures also have the deepest squads. I'm not just specifically referring to this period, but over the whole season, as we often see over the Christmas period, those teams can afford to, to rotate players and rest players. And look, there are some occasions where there's a serious injury crisis at the wrong time. And look, fixture congestion, we do tend to see more injuries than usual. So, that puts even more pressure on squad depth. So, I don't expect anything strange to happen during this period. Look, I think that you're going to continue to see the cream rising to the top. And, I think that's the top four that we've discussed.
I have one question for you. Leicester City. For me, they were actually close to making my losers column this week, which is strange. But they're a team that's not necessarily inundated with depth. They'll be playing in Europe, in the Europa League. They have a manager who has struggled to juggle domestic and European competitions basically his entire career, like I've mentioned before, when he was at Liverpool, when he was at Celtic. To start the season, they've been super underwhelming, I think. I thought Wolves absolutely outplayed them in match day one. I thought they were deservedly beaten up match day two by West Ham, even, 10 men, whatever, but West Ham head and shoulders, the better team. I thought they were lucky to pick up all 3 points against Norwich, because I don't think they were necessarily the better team. They lost the expected goals battle in that game as well, albeit minutely. I think it was 1.44 to 1.24 or something like that. But, a draw would have absolutely been a fair result there. They haven't started the season great. Like I said, they're now going into a period where fixture congestion is going to become an issue. And that's one of the teams who doesn't have that same level of depth as the top four do, just obviously given the circumstances and money that they don't have available to them. Is that a team you think is going to absolutely be the biggest loser in the next month of football? Or do you think that they can kind of pull it together after this international break, recognizing that they've sort of not started the season the way that they may have liked?
Yeah, so look, I absolutely agree with the points you've made about Brendan Rodgers and the depth of that squad. In terms of like the disparity between the results and the performances, and you know, in particular looking at the XG, look, they're not the only club, as you'll know, you're probably looking at the figures, yeah. But you know, they're not the only club that has a serious discrepancy there. Look, you've got Wolves, who should be performing a lot better.
So Wolves, by the way, just quickly, I'll let you finish in a sec, yeah. But just for people listening or watching live that don't know this, Wolves have won the expected goals battle in every game that they've played this season. And not only have they got nothing to show for it, they haven't even scored yet. You know, and again, they were very close to making my losers column for that very reason, where they're playing fantastically and they're dominating games and they're not getting the results to show for it, which can be a little bit alarming the longer it goes on. So, yeah, just a quick one there on Wolves while you brought them up. I think it's worth noting.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, like, the other teams that come to mind, you know, you've got Man United and Tottenham that have they've got great results, but for me, the performances haven't been there. You would probably know better in terms of XG, what they're looking like. So my general expectation is that, you know, and there are exceptions to this, but my general expectation is that, you know, you continue to perform well, eventually the results will come your way. You know, there are such fine margins in football, and this is such a small sample size that, you know, a team like Wolves is a little bit different because they're really relying on that confidence. But you know, if you're not playing well and you're eking out the results, eventually you're going to start picking up losses, and teams will watch you and they're not going to be afraid of you. I don't see any team right now being afraid of Manchester United. Maybe a different prospect now that they have Cristiano Ronaldo, but they're not inspiring fear. And, you know, we saw that with Wolves and Southampton both.
This is, trust me, I take any opportunity to take a shot at United, and this is not necessarily, I'm not saying this just to take a shot at them, but I have no idea how they won that game. Genuinely, Wolves were so much better.
I don't know how Wolves didn't score.
Incredible. Like, Adama Traore absolutely destroyed them again. Like, I don't think there's any one player in world football who can be so impactful and yet be so wasteful at the same time.
Yeah, and it's getting a little contagious because, you know, I say almost the same thing about Trincão now. I mean, he's had some real flashes of brilliance, but just when it comes to that final ball, putting in the back of the net, it's just no quality on it. So,
yeah. Anyway, like I said, I'm not going to throw too much mud at United in this one, but I thought they were extremely fortunate there.
Absolutely. And look, back to your point about Leicester. Look, if the performances don't improve, the results will follow. They're going to start losing games. They absolutely have to play better than they have been. But, you know, the what Rodgers is going to have to instill in that club is, look, we're not playing our best and we're still getting the results. So, you know, there is a positive in that in itself. And I think that's going to be the same for Solskjaer and for Spurs. They're going to have to remind them that, you know, even though it's not really happening out there on the pitch, you know, they're still getting the result. So it's just a matter now of improving the performance.
Who finishes on top at the end of the season? West Ham or Leicester?
If you're asking me on the evidence of this season, I'm leaning towards West Ham. If you had asked me at the start of the season, I would have said Leicester. So, look, let me stick with my original and say Leicester. I expect Rodgers to turn it around.
I'm going to say West Ham.
The manager. Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to say West Ham. I think they have more consistency to them right now. I think they just play a better brand of football as well. I don't think Leicester necessarily play a great style of football. But hey, that'll be an interesting battle, is to see which teams can sort of nab those Europa League spots come the end of the season, which for clubs like Leicester and West Ham is huge financially, by the way. You know, it might not seem like much, but to those teams, it can mean quite a fair bit in terms of being able to, you know, splash in the transfer window and develop the teams further. But before we do sign off, let's do one little quick preview into match day 4. I said we wouldn't, but we do have a grudge match on the horizon, Surge.
I know where you're going with this.
I'm not going to dive into the game. I'll save that for next week, where we can give our cases on the game and how it'll play out, and I'll put out the projection model. But I have a question for you as a Leeds fan.
Yep.
Are you at all worried about the fact they haven't been able to pick up 3 points to start the season yet? / are you worried about potential second season syndrome, as they call it?
I'm not worried about the fact that we haven't won a game yet. I'd be more worried if, I know this is going to sound like a really obvious statement, but had we lost our first three games and or played poorly in them, I would be concerned. The way I look at it, look, Man United was a repeat of last season. You know, you live by the sword, you die by it. We just got destroyed on the counterattack. And that was a really bad way to start the season. I actually thought the performance against Everton was really good, you know, dominated possession, passes, played a good brand of football. This weekend against Burnley, look, the phrase that comes to mind, you know, there's a concept in boxing of ring generalship, which is basically, you know, making the ability to get the other fighter to fight your fight. So if you're a brawler,
yeah,
you want the fight to be as rough as possible. And, you know, Burnley were the brawler and they won the ring generalship battle. They made that game as physical and scrappy as imaginable, and Leeds played right into that. A lot of aerial balls, a lot of really rash challenges. Look, I think there could have been a red card as well. But
the Ashley Barnes one, right?
Ashley Barnes, yeah.
That was ridiculous, like absolutely ridiculous. I don't know. That's another example, right, where VAR surely have to look at it and say to the referee, maybe you want to double-check that. I know you saw it, but it might be worth looking at it from a different angle on replay.
I think no fans and it's a red card. Honestly, I think that the referee, it was refereeing that game in the context of the fact that it was such a rough match.
Hostile environment, yeah.
It was just very, very hostile, and the crowd were, you know, very vocal as well. And that's intimidating for referees.
Yeah.
So I think you just accepted, and I'm not saying it's the right way to referee a game. He accepted that it was rough, it was physical, and that obviously favoured Burnley, and Leeds played right into that.
Yeah.
So, to answer your first question, I'm not worried necessarily from the fact that we haven't got the 3 points. Second season syndrome, that's a very real thing. And we see a lot of clubs sort of come back down to earth in the second season. And obviously, from my perspective as a Leeds supporter and, you know, believing in this team. And look, I think as a supporter, you have to have faith, you know. If I was an Arsenal supporter right now, maybe not. Maybe that's
no way.
But as a Leeds supporter, I have faith that in the quality of this squad. Like, I do genuinely believe, you know, guys like Rafinha and Bamford, you know, Calvin Phillips, genuine quality players that are sought
after. Calvin Phillips is fantastic.
Like, look, I think he was one of the shining lights on the weekend. But, I believe in the quality of this squad, and I really hope that, you know, I think it's a very real thing. And if they go another couple of games without winning, obviously it's possible because they've got a really tough fixture coming up next, that could get into their minds and that could affect their momentum. And as we all know, the margins are so fine, basically from fifth place all the way down to 15. You know, it's usually the same amount of points as there is that separating first to fourth in the Premier League. So, and, you know, the point of that being that momentum matters and confidence and belief matters, because the teams are of such similar quality. And, you know, I do think that Leeds have a couple of players that can set themselves apart from the pack. So, look, Josh, I'm going to go no concern whatsoever.
Good. I'm glad. I'm happy that there's no concern there. But we'll talk in a couple of weeks' time after you are four games without a win. But let's leave it at that for this week. Next week, we'll do a proper match day four preview, you know, with everything there, looking at fixtures, diving into analytics there and analysis on the matchups. But, you know, I guess, I don't know, enjoy your international break, Serge.
It's going to be depressing, but it is what it is.
Exactly. We should be used to it, and yet we are not. But that's all for this week on the EPL Lounge. Appreciate everyone who tunes in. Do drop us a like wherever it is you're watching. That helps us out a ton. And like I said, in exactly a week's time, we'll be back same time talking more Premier League football.